Welcome to Now. I'm David Byrd.
And I'm Aisha Khalid.
Life on one California college campus changed forever recently when a violent attack left six people dead. We'll talk to one student there.
There's been a chain of events that have occurred at our school that has really just, I think that students are overall overwhelmed with everything.
Plus, the California killings have reignited the debate over gun control in the United States.
We'll hear about one girl's efforts to outlaw bullying.
You might think Lyme disease is a recent problem, but turns out it's an ancient one.
That's all coming up on this edition of Now. The University of California, Santa Barbara continues to recover from last month's deadly attacks that left six people dead and 13 others wounded.
The campus has been rocked by the attacks in which Elliot Roger stabbed his three roommates to death and then shot three other students.
To get some perspective on the impact of the killings, Olivia Reed spoke with Brianna Tsutsui, a rising senior at UC Santa Barbara.
Brianna, as a UCSB student, what was the atmosphere like after the shooting? How were the students' attitudes on campus?
I mean, it's been really tough for everybody. The people who, along with the victims, there were actually a lot of people injured as well. And there were some people that actually physically witnessed it. And then those who knew friends of friends of friends. And no matter the relation to the victims, it's just been overall, just extremely unsettling. There's been a chain of events that have occurred at our school that have really just, I think that students are overall overwhelmed with everything. I mean, it's pretty much, as you can imagine, it's pretty a morose atmosphere. It's not the same.
So a lot of people were affected in this.
Like I said, whether you were close friends with the victims or not, it's overall been just a sense of violation. We have a small, very tight-knit community, very safe. I've always felt comfortable to walk around, whether it's 2 a.m., 3 a.m., there's constantly people out. It's just a very friendly communal atmosphere where people are often invited over to socialize, and I think that a lot of this has sort of disturbed the flow and ebb of our community a little bit, but it's also really brought a lot of people who wouldn't normally interact together to sort of prove that this isn't going to break our communal spirit.
So what personal steps have you taken to heal from this tragic event?
It's not that I feel my personal safety is in danger or things like that. The fact of the matter is it could happen anywhere. It's just, I really felt for the families of the victims in particular. To be honest, it's something we're still dealing with and, working with coworkers, other students, my roommates. In something like this, you learn there's no real proper textbook way of going about something. It's kind of day to day, there's this vibe that you're kind of getting around campus, and then within your own self, it's just kind of something. We're still kind of in shock about everything. I'm still kind of in shock, and I'm just really thankful for everybody in my life right now, just knowing that all of this took place, less than half a mile from where I live. And that's a place where my friends, I walk. It literally by chance, the whole thing, it could have been anyone. And so for me, it's honestly just trying to always hold a place for these people in my mind and paying respect where respect is due. And That's my whole focus that I've taken from this, and just being so thankful that, my safety and not more people were hurt.
Yeah.
Because, it's crazy.
That's Olivia Reed speaking with Brianna Tsutsui, a student at the University of California, Santa Barbara.
What do you think? Let us know your opinion by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And you can send us an email. Our address is voaasia@voanews.com.
And you can follow us on Twitter. Our address there is @NowVOAShow.
The killings in California have reignited a debate about gun control and mental health in the United States.
Some members of the U.S. Congress are calling for laws to be changed to make it easier for families to have a loved one hospitalized when they are worried about that person's health or the safety of the community.
As VOA's Cindy Sain tells us, the debate pits public health and safety against constitutional guarantees of the right to bear arms.
Republican Representative Tim Murphy is a child psychologist. Citing a long list of alleged perpetrators of mass killings in Santa Barbara, California, Newtown, Connecticut, Tucson, Arizona, and Aurora, Colorado, among others, Murphy said all of them appeared to have one thing in common.
All had untreated or undertreated serious mental illness. All spiraled out of control within a system that lacked the basic mechanisms to help.
Congressman Murphy pointed out that violence by people with mental illness is very rare and is most often self-inflicted. In fact, the mentally ill are more likely to be the victims of violence, robberies, and other crimes. Murphy is one of many experts who say the U.S. mental health care system is in crisis and needs a major overhaul. He has introduced legislation that would push states to permit seriously ill patients to be hospitalized against their will. At a forum on Capitol Hill Thursday, Edward Kelly said his family has struggled for 15 years to help their now adult son with a serious mental illness and his rejection of treatment. Kelly said the mental health system is failing his son, who has often ended up wandering the streets homeless after short hospitalizations.
But the laws and the standards of what gets you in that hospital are too high. So you go past that moment of safety, and now you're just clinging.
Another expert at the forum was DJ Jaffe, executive director of Mental Illness Policy Org. Jaffe said the U.S. also needs to change its priorities on mental health care spending.
My one message is we have to stop ignoring the most seriously ill. We can't go on pretending that they don't exist.
Jaffe said that until the early 1960s, most mental health expenditures went to the seriously mentally ill in state psychiatric hospitals. But today, more federal dollars go to improving the mental health of all citizens instead of focusing on the most seriously ill. The debate is likely to continue in Congress. Democratic Representative Ron Barber has sponsored competing legislation that would focus on early identification of mental illness and treatment. Barber was among those injured in 2011 when a gunman opened fire on then-Congresswoman Gabriella Giffords in Tucson, Arizona. Barber and Giffords survived, but six others were killed. Cindy Sain, VOA News, on Capitol Hill.
So what about you? Do you think stricter laws would help this problem?
Or are new laws not capable of preventing this type of tragedy?
Let us know your thoughts by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And we're also on Twitter. Our address there is @NowVOAShow.
Tomorrow way too far away, and we can't get back yesterday. But we young right now, we got it right now, so get up right now.
Meanwhile, the city of Carson, California, is just south of Los Angeles and boasts one of the largest Filipino concentrations in the United States.
Last month, the city council considered a measure that would make physical, emotional, and online bullying a misdemeanor offense punishable by fines.
Although the ordinance was passed on first reading, it was ultimately voted down.
Jade Archers is a Filipino-American teen who testified in favor of the ordinance. She said she told the Carson City Council it was time to listen to those who are afraid to speak up.
Because it's terrifying telling people that you're getting bullied. I know for a fact it is, because you're afraid that you're going to be told that it's not important. But this ordinance shows us that every single kid is important.
Jade says that schoolmates started teasing and bullying her about her appearance at age 7. They called her fat, ugly, and worthless.
After years of enduring the constant torment, she tried to take her own life at 12 years old. Now at 15, she is on the road to recovery and has even established an anti-bullying group called Jade Against Bullying.
Jade told VOA's Ashley Westerman that she came to expect the bullying every day, and it made her feel worthless.
And I felt like I was never going to amount to anything because of what they told me. And I believed them because, you know, they're my own age. And you tend to believe what your friends say more than your parents. But I didn't feel really anything because I was so numbed by the amount of pain I was consumed with.
This bullying went on for years, obviously, if it started when you were 7. And it drove you to try and take your life at 12 years old. Do you care to tell me about that time in your life?
Well, I tried to take my life. I really just, I was to the point where I couldn't really deal with my emotions anymore. I was upset and I was angry and I was sad and I was, you know, I was feeling everything except for happiness, anything good.
Tell me a little bit about how you recovered from that point in your life.
I mean, I'm still recovering today because the day after I tried taking my life, it was really weird because I was sitting there, I didn't know what to do. And I was just like, I almost took my own life. And I didn't realize the severity of it until a couple weeks after. And it took me a really, really long time to get over that. And it still takes me today to look at myself like I'm not everything everybody calls me. And recovery does not take a day or a week or a month or a year. It takes a long time. It's a long process of describing who you think you are as a person. And it's really hard when you have people telling you what they want you to be and what they think you are. But what helped me cope was my mom. My mom, my whole family was there for me. And I had one friend that was there for me, and that's all I needed.
Jade, in 2012, you started the support group Jade Against Bullying. What does your group do exactly, and how has starting that group also helped you with your recovery?
We are a group that goes to schools and talks about bullying, talks about my experience and how you should not feel worthless. Basically, we stand up for each other. We stand up for the people that cannot stand up for themselves. And we tell them that you're not alone. We come for them. And, well, it helped me because I never knew the amount of people felt the way I did around the world. I never knew that so many girls felt worthless. And boys, too. I never knew that there were so many people that felt that way every day. And it helps me because I know that I'm not alone. I have people here for me. And then the only way that we're going to get out of this horrible thing that we call bullying is if we stop doing it to each other.
What is the one piece of advice that you would give to someone who came up to you and said, I'm being bullied, Jade, what do I do?
You can't let the bullying consume you. You can't let people define you like a word in a dictionary because you're not a word in a dictionary. You can't be afraid to speak up because you're afraid nobody will listen, because I'm here listening right now and I'm going to tell you that you're going to get through it because you're strong enough. Because if you're strong enough to go through that every single day, you're strong enough to handle what's going to happen after you tell somebody about it. You have to tell your parents, and if they don't listen, you have to tell your school, and you're going to keep on telling them until somebody listens because there is somebody that cares about you.
The anti-bullying ordinance failed to pass in Carson City. So can you tell me a little bit about how you feel about the ordinance not passing, as well as where do you go from here with your activism?
Well, I feel kind of confused because the first time we had the vote on it, it was unanimous. Everybody said yes. And the second time, most of them said no. And I didn't get it because how can you go from feeling so strong about something to not? But I guess now all I can do is keep on doing what I'm doing, keep on being an activist and keep on going to places to speak out and tell them why they shouldn't bully and what happens when you do. But I'm not going to give up because they didn't see the good in the anti-bullying ordinance.
That's Jade Archer, founder of the anti-bullying group, Jade Against Bullying, speaking with VOA's Ashley Westerman.
You might not know, but Aisha and I both sit at computers to do our work.
And sometimes for hours at a time.
But scientists tell us that sitting for too long can have serious long-term effects on your health.
But viewers Roseanne Scoble found that answers to those problems could be as simple as taking a short walk.
You can't tell by looking that Michelle Baxter suffers from chronic pain in her muscles and joints. She now spends her workday standing at her desk as a remedy for fibromyalgia.
Since I've been standing, my lower lumbar feels much better, and plus I get to exercise and move more, keep everything circulating in the blood. It feels good.
Baxter works with student records at the George Washington University in the nation's capital. Her switch to a standing desk has given her more energy and made her more productive.
I can get more done, not even thinking about being stiff and then got to get up and trying to find a place to exercise. So I'm moving. I'm exercising as I'm standing.
And she's burning as many as 1,200 calories a day. That's one reason standing desks are slowly moving into cramped cubicles. Another is research that shows the more you sit, the greater your risk for major illness, says Amanda Visick, an exercise psychologist with the Milken Institute School of Public Health at GW.
It causes poor health outcomes, including overweight, obesity, type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, hypertension, depression, and even mortality.
As a young woman, Visick developed hip and back pain from sitting. Since she's converted to a standing desk like Baxter, she feels better and has more energy.
I could even work a 10-hour workday and still feel good at the end of the day instead of feeling lethargic and like you just want to go home and then engage in more sedentary activities by laying on the couch.
One study finds that for older adults, every hour spent sitting is linked to a 50% greater risk of becoming disabled. But no one at any age is spared.
So even if we do make it to the gym at the end of the day and we go for a run and do other things, if we spend the majority of our day sitting, right, in sedentary behavior, that is its own independent risk factor. So one is not the remedy for the other.
So if exercise does not compensate for sitting, what does? Visick suggests building activity into your daily routine.
In the workplace, instead of shooting off an email or picking up the phone to call a colleague, you can walk to their office to ask the same question or have the same conversation.
The Milken Institute School of Public Health promotes this vision. The central staircase encourages taking the steps. Elevated tables in classrooms and lounge areas provide the option to stand, and all faculty members have standing desks. Michelle Baxter says she takes the long way to the photocopier or to get a cup of coffee. What seems like such a small thing has changed her life and prompted her to offer this advice.
Well, everybody stand. It's good. It's good for you. Everybody stand. Just for a little while. Try it. Thank y'all.
Roseanne Scherbel, VOA News, Washington.
Aisha, I don't know if you know this, but a couple of years ago, I ruptured a disc in my back. And one of the things that the doctors and the physical therapists told me is do not sit too long.
So what did you do?
Well, actually, I've recently acquired one of those desks mm-hmm. that allows you to stand up and work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people have been kind of joking with me and going, golly, you look so tall. And I'm like, well, I am this tall, but yeah.
But stories like these, they also shed light on the problem of obesity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, recently, medical journal, health journal, Lancet, came out with its findings based on the figures that it collected from all over the world. And according to those findings, U.S. still tops the list of the most obese countries.
Wow.
But again, Pakistan is not far behind. Pakistan
really?
Is also coming up. Pakistan is now number 9.
Wow.
And that worries me a lot. Because in Pakistan, the problem is not food. In Pakistan, the problem, which is the main reason which is causing this issue of overweightness or obesity, is the lack of physical activity for our, you know, children.
Huh. You know, I know that First Lady Michelle Obama has placed a big emphasis on, you know, exercising for 60 minutes a day. I'm lucky. Today, I mm-hmm. walked my dogs, you know, and that took about a half an hour. So, but my doctor told me, you know, he said, look, for general health,
not to lose weight or to get in, you know, great shape or anything. He said, just for general health, walking a half an hour a day is about what somebody my age needs to maintain our health. But, you know, sitting for too long is a no-no. They said, I've heard a phrase in the medical literature, sitting is the new smoking.
Yeah.
It's as bad for you as
smoking. It's so bad. It's so bad, yeah. So all of us ought to take some time out. So do you work at a desk all day? Do you plan to move more?
You can let us know your thoughts by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And if you would like to see video on this story, log on to our website, www.voanews.com.
Lyme disease is a painful, debilitating condition that is spread by the bite of ticks.
The disease was identified only about 40 years ago.
But as VOA's Jessica Berman found out, researchers say the bacteria that causes it dates back to the age of the dinosaurs, and those ancient roots may have made it difficult to treat.
The bacterium that causes Lyme disease was present at least 15 million years ago, some 12 million years earlier than the appearance of modern humans. Researchers at Oregon State University discovered a disease tick in ancient fossilized amber from the Dominican Republic. The tick was dissected and examined with a powerful microscope by George Poynard, an expert in the detection of ancient microbes. When he drilled into the amber and opened up the tick, Poynard says he saw the same spirochete-like bacteria called Borrelis that causes Lyme disease today.
You can see the spirochetes. They're still there. They're not moving, but they're frozen in different positions, kind of curving this way and that way. It almost looks like it was like you took a flash photograph of these creatures swimming around. They're in all different positions in the tick. On top of each other, swirling around, so you know the tick was heavily infected.
The discovery of the ancient tick and Lyme bacteria was reported in the journal Historical Biology. Bacteria are an ancient group of microbes dating back almost 3.6 billion years, almost as old as the Earth itself. They are rarely preserved in the fossil record, except in amber, which is hardened tree sap. Poynard, a professor emeritus with OSU's Department of Integrative Biology, says Lyme bacteria evolved over millions of years, likely becoming resistant to efforts to treat them in humans. While Lyme disease is easily vanquished with antibiotics soon after infection, Poynard notes that its symptoms are often mistaken for other conditions, and as time passes before it's recognized, it becomes chronic and increasingly difficult to treat.
It's much harder after the spirochetes get into the system and then lodge in various parts of the body. Then it's very difficult, and there are various treatments, experimental treatments, that are being done out there.
Lyme disease affects the joints, heart, and central nervous system. People can become infected anywhere in the world through the bite of an infected tick carried by mice or deer. One experimental and expensive treatment is immunoglobulin, or IVIG, a blood product administered intravenously. IVIG is made up of pooled antibodies extracted from the plasma of over 1,000 blood donors. The treatment is usually reserved for people with autoimmune disease and blood disorders. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
To learn more about Lyme disease, log on to our website, www.voanews.com.
And we would love to hear your thoughts. You can post them by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And we're also on Twitter. Follow us there by logging on to @NowVOAShow. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Now.
We would love to hear your questions or comments. You can post them on our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
We might read one of your comments on a future show.
We are also on Twitter. Our address there is @NowVOAShow.
And you can always email us by addressing it to voaasia@voanews.com.
Patrice Martin produces our show.
The managing editor of VOA English is Diane Gao.
Until next time, I'm Aisha Khalid.
And I'm David Byrd. Join us again Monday for another edition of Now.